Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 003.
It don't mean a thing if it ain't got that swing.
Welcome to the Jazz Piano School Podcast.
Learn jazz piano without all the guesswork.
Now, your host, Brendan Lowe.
All right, welcome back, everyone. Here we are at the Jazz Piano School Podcast, episode number 3. I kind of forgot what episode it was because we had done so many. Anyway, sorry. So it's pretty early. I want to get this out as soon as I could. I was at, some of you may know, the Next Generation Jazz Festival in Monterey, accompanying Sac State Vocal Jazz Group, which is a lot of fun. We're doing Dirty Loop's version of Rolling in the Deep, which is a really great transcription. I'm going to put that out on the website soon. And speaking of the website we are associated with is jazzpianoschool.com. Jazzpianoschool.com. So, again, just a little heads up, this podcast is for all of you listening who are wanting to learn jazz piano, wanting to get into it and find out as much information as possible. And that's why I'm putting this out, because I want to help all of you just get every resource possible, get transcriptions, masterclasses, which I'm about to put out now, get recordings, notated music, video lessons. Just I want to give you guys, I want to develop a hub where you know you can go to for information and progress and just really have a solid definitive plan that you can use on a day-to-day basis. So, like I was saying, jazzpianoschool.com is the website we're associated with. And in this episode, I have a very special recording to release. And it is a recording that I took of Eric Harland, who's an amazing, phenomenal drummer at the Next Generation Jazz Festival, and he was doing a masterclass there. And so I am going to let you guys hear that. He says a lot of great insight about playing and what to do and how to interact with people. I asked a question at the end that I thought he gave a really great response to, about giving support and how he handles playing with new people. There are some drumming technical questions, but you can still take a lot away from it because he talks about how to play drums with ease. And so a lot of the things he's talking about, you can definitely relate to the piano, how to play the piano with ease, how to play faster with ease, because it's pretty much all the same when you get to the level that he's at. In order to get to that level, you need to have these concepts down and really hone in on them and practice them. So I'll stop talking so you guys can hear this masterclass. It's about 47 minutes, so it's pretty long, but it's really nice. They play up front, they play a track, and then he talks and takes questions. So here we go. Let's get right into it.
Thank you. I see a hand in the back. What you got?
So, what are you concentrating on, and how do you build that solo?
What am I concentrating on? I'm concentrating on absolutely nothing. seriously, though.
Well, if you were to talk to some younger jazz musicians, and you were to help them develop how to get a solo like that,
well, what should they be working on? It's a mix of a lot of different things. I would say the first thing is to, you have to be one with the instrument. Like, when I'm playing the drums, it's like an extension of myself. I don't look at playing the drums as like, oh, I'm playing the drums. Because sometimes it's easy to approach the drums that way. Like, you're sitting there, and you're thinking, oh, it's all these toms, and it's all these cymbals, I'm using all my limbs. But for me, I'm almost feeling like I'm in a studio, and I'm just kind of like creating music. So, you know, even if I'm at home and I practice, there's many phases, so forgive me, this could be a long explanation. A lot of time I just practice something very simple, just so that my body can feel at one with the instrument. So I can just kind of play what I call synchronized time. And then from there, I can just move into anything. I just kind of move using the quarter note as an anchor, and then I can play in and out of that pulse. It becomes a pulse to me. So I'm like, you know, you could just play something really simple. Swing. Or you can really kind of evolve. So this is like one, two, three, four, one, two, three, four. Well, the way my brain works is that I'm hearing one, two, three, four, but I'm also hearing like a triplet. One, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three, one, two, three. And then even in that triplet, I'm hearing like a quarter note triplet. One, two, three, four, 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 one, two, three, four. You can even evolve on that. One, two, three, four, five, one. It can be so many things. I can do. The next thing is just practicing to be relaxed and to act like you're speaking. So if I'm acting like I'm speaking, just hanging out with you guys, you know, it's so much fun. I just want to try to phrase a little bit, you know. I'm just playing the drums, and those things become rhythms. You start to hear those rhythms when you play. So as you play, it's almost like you're rapping or flowing, or get all those rhythms in there, and it just sounds like free playing. But with the pulse underneath, see, without the pulse, it just sounds like random rhythms. Nobody even pays attention to it. It's just flying by. But you put the pulse underneath, then they have something they can kind of dance to. So you're like, oh man, this is kind of nice. Then you just make music with it. Making a little bit of music, just having a little bit of fun. So that's what I do when I develop a solo. I have another splash underneath. Oh, so it's the hidden. Yeah. I always like to surprise myself. So that's why the funny thing is, I always thought my career would go down a whole different path. Like, I couldn't imagine the way it has turned out. I started getting all these calls playing with a lot of great musicians. And the one thing I noticed is that I was always uncomfortable. And I hated it at first. I was like, oh my God, I just want to be in a situation where I can just be comfortable and then, you know, just play all the stuff I know. And that situation never happened except for like at home. You know, I'd be at home and I'd put on like my favorite record, or I set up a groove and I'd be sitting there and I'm playing with my groove. And I'm like, yeah, this is it. I wish the cats could hear me now. But then I'd go out and then it was just completely the opposite. You know, cats would call a tune and I'd be like, man, I don't know that tune. They'd be like, oh, you hear it? I was like, man, I don't know it. How do I hear it if I don't know it? And so, you know, but I had to react on instinct. And that became my thing. It's like everything about improvisation is instinct. Like, you don't plan, you know, when you wake up in the morning, what you're going to say. Like, with everybody that you're going to meet. You know, it's like, oh, yeah, okay, I'm going to meet this guy around 11. So I'm going to say, what's up to him? He might be a homie. And this person, oh, yeah, he might like be super smart, so I got to be eloquent and then say this to this cat. It doesn't work like that. I wish, you know, but also I don't, because there's something beautiful about the spontaneity. So I just kind of got hip to it and I said, you know what, forget it. You know, who needs like structure? Who needs boundaries? Like, I realized that I was limiting myself by always trying to present one aspect that I felt like I know and just not allow myself to just fall and fail in every aspect of everything that I was doing. Like, I think that's the part of life, is that you just go for it. You, like, you don't know how it's going to turn out, but that's the beauty, is that you're in the midst of it. You know, it's just like you're in the forest and you're trying to figure out how to get out. And it seems scary, but it's not, because you realize that you're surrounded by nature. And that's the thing with music, is that you're surrounded by music. So once you start playing, you're just in that space. I'm like, everything is beautiful. Anything is possible. You're like, oh man, I can mess up. And it's a funny thing. I used to have a fear of like dropping sticks. And so, you know, what I would do is, like, you know, as soon as I would play, I'm like, yeah, man, let's play. You know, anything, you know, it's like, it's, you know, it's funny, but at the same time, it works. You want to allow yourself to just be natural. Like, be natural. You see those shirts, don't be flat, don't be short, be natural. It's a musician's joke. Anyway, okay. Long answer to that question. Yeah, that one, and then this guy here, too. Yeah, you.
Is it all in the wrists, or is it all in the fingers?
It's in both. That's a good question. So, this gets technical, so I apologize for all you non-drummers. You have many techniques that you can use, but for me, you know, there's different kinds of grip. And then you got French grip, you know, it just goes straight, which is weird to call that French. So French grip is just like a direct, and it goes this way. German grip is all the way this way. And so you can play this way. So most of the time when I'm playing Rasmus pattern, I'm playing in French grip, but I can also play in German grip. It's kind of weird because it forces your body to move that way. German grip is kind of more what I use when I'm playing the snare drum with my left hand. So I'm moving it like that way. And the funny thing is that American grip falls right in the middle between. So you got French, you got German, and then you got American. I don't know why. That's what was in the books. Somebody should question those guys. But with each grip, you use different kinds of fingering. And so fingering is very important because you can save so much on your wrist. Because your wrists use a lot of motion. So if I'm playing on a cymbal, and, you know, if I'm using just wrist, it's a lot of horn movement, and I can get really tired. But if I use fingers, so I'll use wrist first. This is wrist. And the funny thing is I still have to use a little bit of finger while I'm using wrist, but if I just use all fingers, it's much more relaxed. Like, I can, my arm barely moves. So I conserve so much more energy. And so that's what I do. I use like my fingers to try to propel, you know, in a way you're using physics when you play the drums. You're using the bounce, you're using grab, you're using the fact that the stick is the cymbal that rebounds back to you. So you're trying to learn how to balance that. And so you're not actually playing. What you're doing is like you're controlling like something that happens. You know, like it's like a basketball player, they have to control the dribble. And you can use it how to control that. It's the same thing with the drums. You used to get used to how to control the bounce. And so, like, I can play really fast without having to play really fast. There is... Okay. I'm going to give you two examples. There's a part like in your foot where it doesn't, the muscle is like a twitch. It's really personal. It's hard to, you can't really see it, but you can kind of get used to it because what you're doing is that you're not thinking about the muscle per se. You're just kind of moving your foot and you're seeing that which span of distance you can get between. Am I making sense? I'm sorry. It's getting really technical. I'm thinking about the span of distance I could use within my foot just to try to get it going as fast as possible. I take these exercises and they're like exercises. And then the funny thing is what I like to do, which goes back to the question he had about how to develop a solo. Sometimes it's like an experiment. I'm like, well, what can I do with this? Well, the first drummer I loved was Elvin Jones. The second, well, it's hard to say because from Elvin, I kind of came into train John Coltrane and Elvin Jones around the same time. But then I fell so in love with Train that it led me through Miles. Because I was like, man, Train is amazing. So I wanted to kind of hear his whole history of what he was doing. And And so that led me back to, like, you know, Philly Joe Jones, and then from Philly Joe Jones, I was checking out Roy Haynes, and from Roy Haynes, I was checking out Max Roach, and, you know, I just kind of went down the historical list of just checking out all these great drummers, which, you know, inevitably led me up to Tony Williams. But then, I loved everybody, because everyone like had a very different approach to drums. Like I would listen to Elvin, you know, and the way Elvin would play, it always sounded like he was, you know, really drunk. You know, I mean, listen to him, and, you know, I mean, you shouldn't be drinking if you in high school. But you listen to Elvin. You know, I had this real, like, Dilla laid back, you know, like, way behind me. But then you had, like, Tony, who really played on top of me. So much time, but even guys like Roy Haynes, I mean, it's hard to kind of mimic Roy Haynes, but I love Roy because I always call him like the skipper. Jack DeJohnette, you know, just was like an Elvin-ish Tony, you know. It's like a real bass drum kind of rumble when he would play like that really dry cymbal. I spent a lot of time definitely checking out every drummer that I could, everybody, because everybody has something to offer. So not even just, you know, drummers from that age, like even new drummers, and I was fortunate to grow up with a lot of great drummers from Houston, and, you know, we practice, and that was our thing. And, like, we would go through and just check out all these great drummers and try to sound like them. Now, there's a big difference in trying to sound like a drummer and then really going in and like completely changing your identity to become that drummer. So I never suggest changing your identity. I think it serves a better purpose if you just check out as many drummers as possible, because you never know which ones actually speak to you. And you just kind of work with it. You allow it to, you know, you listen to records, allow it to play in your ear, and then you just kind of work with that. So allow that to just be a system of reference. And because I feel like if I tried to sound too much like any other drummer, then I was going to lose my personal sound. And that's what you don't want to lose, is like your God-given gift of what you sound like. You never want to compromise that. You just want to add to it. And so you're checking out everything just to add language. It's like when you're a baby, you know, and it's funny, I heard Victor Wooten say this thing once, and it was really great. The biggest difference between learning to speak a language and learning to play music is that as a baby growing up, just learning how to speak English per se, because we speak English, it's like you're speaking with some of the best English speakers in the world. You know, so it's like you have your parents, every time they're talking to you, they're not even trying to correct you because, you know, you're non-English speaking as a baby. It's just so cute. So you're sitting there like, oh, baby, that's so wonderful. And then the funny thing is that they even join in with you. Like, they go like, but the funny thing is that, so basically when you're learning a language, you're encouraged, you know, by your parents or by other English-speaking people to join in, and they don't make you feel bad about the fact that you don't speak English yet, because they know eventually you will. The same thing doesn't apply in music, but it should. It's like in music, you're already expected to be like this amazing English speaker. It's like, well, come up here, sound great. It's like, well, I didn't have enough time to sound horrible. I have to sound bad first. And go with me in my, you know, not so sophisticated sound so that I can adequately grow. And so that's, you know, take that as encouragement for you guys that you need time to grow. You're not just going to get better overnight. And don't hold that as a sticker, like, oh, I have to do this, or it's, you know, the end of the world. It's not true. Music is a lifetime journey. And it's not about just being the best. It's about having something to say. You get the difference? And so you want to be able to say something. How much time do I have? Okay, I got 10 minutes. Okay, I spoke way too long. A few more questions and we'll play one more song.
How do you deal with instances where you're not feeling the eighth note time with the other members of the rhythm section?
That I'm not feeling like the time is consistent.
Yeah, like, yeah, each person's feeling the time differently.
It depends. It depends. Most of the time I try to establish, the first thing I try to do when I'm playing with anyone is establish a relationship. And by that, and what I mean by relationship is a trust. Letting them know that I'm with you. Like, you know, anybody that comes on the stage, once we start playing, my main goal is I'm with you. You know, forget about chops, anything. It's like I'm with you, because nothing I will play will make any sense if we're not in sync. But once we're in sync, then the world is our oyster. Like, we can just do anything possible. So the main thing I do is like I'm listening to the bass player, seeing where his pulse is, and I'm paying attention to that. So he's like, so I'm like, okay, that's happening. And then I'm checking out where he is on the pulse, because there is what I call it's like in society, we have a social belief system. But then there's like what is true, but that's what we all believe is true. And then there's like individual truths within that. So, you know, it's like a threefold kind of situation. So it's the same thing in music. There is a social pulse that we all kind of feel that, okay, this is where it is. But then given that, he might have his own system that he likes to play on top of that, or right in the center of that, or behind it. It just depends on his personality, where he feels to be. The same with the piano player, the horn player. It just depends where their placement is. That's what like gives me my information. I'm like, oh, it's this kind of guy. You know, okay, well, you know, he likes to expand the time this way. So I can make either the beat, you know, straight down the middle so that it makes what he goes for sound, not to say sound better, but more understandable. Because if you listen to a guy that's playing free, and if I play free with him, then sometimes everybody gets lost sometimes. So what I try to do is just like establish this connection, and then we all take turns. So I hear once he goes back to actually, you know, playing the chords, actually, you know, playing the system is what I would call it. Then it gives me room to expand on that. And I, you know, I let him know, it's like, oh yeah, I can do that too, I'm with you. Oh yeah, I can do the Matrix thing. And so that's kind of how I'm communicating with all of the musicians. Like I'm moving in and out of like, oh yeah, okay, he's doing this, he's doing that. But it's all about establishing that relationship. So I guess a simple answer to your question is always just be simple. If it's too confusing, like if his pulse is ahead or beyond, you know, or behind, there's different ways you can approach that, which is a whole other topic, you know, that I like to talk about, which is, you know, approaching playing on top of the beat or behind the beat or in the middle. But the main goal is to just try to establish that relationship. Like just play as simple as possible, you know, quarter notes in every limb if you just feel like you got to use them all. Or you can just lay out. That's also a possibility. Never feel the pressure that you always have to take on the load of everything that's happening. Music is about self-expression. It's not about carrying everybody, because you know what that does is that it weighs you down, and then you feel like, well, you know, the concert could have been better if, you know, Cass was listening to me and they let me solo, you know. You know, I'd have made it happen, you know what I'm saying? I got skills. So, you know, just participate. You know, everybody's here, you know, pretty much for the same purpose. And it's called team ball. It's team play. You know, stop taking all the shots. You know, stop doing all the crossovers that don't make any sense. You know, getting the ball, taking it away and stuff. You know, you play basketball with those cats. You know, you do it that way. Then they finally throw it to you, but it's like some like convoluted. Like, man, how was I supposed to see that? I'm just thinking of a pass. Oh, try to. So, anyway, simplicity. What's that? Oh, of course. Well, Baby Dobbs was before Gene Krupa. Yeah. But Gene Krupa was great because, you know, he was, you know, that's when it started to become really popular in the public's eye. You know, Gene Krupa and Buddy Rich, you know, those guys. You know, before then, you know, we was in clubs. You know, like, oh, man, you know, I got this kid down at the club, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, Gene Krupa had his own big band, he had the logo on the front bass drum, you know, the same with Buddy Rich, and so they were able to do talk shows, and, you know, they brought a whole different, you know, era to the drum, but it was still great drummers, great sound, great swing. I mean, check them all out. I mean, you can even go to Shelly Mann, you never know, because everybody be like, oh, I go back as far as, you know, Chris Dave. Kendrick Scott, Marcus Gilmore, yeah. These cats are living. It's funny though. You go to a lot of institutions, you know, working with guys with drums, and like, yeah, man, I get around the kid. I get around the kid. I was like, well, do you know Art Blakey? Art Blakey? Yeah. Because Dave, you know what I'm saying? Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, finals. All right. I guess we just finish it up with questions, though. What you got, man? Oh, a lot. One, definitely for sure, is playing with Zaki Hussein. I mean, he's amazing. I mean, that's just been like a straight up and down humbling experience because, you know, his knowledge of rhythms is just so vast. And the way he approaches it is so different than the way we approach. Like, every style is different. Like, you know, you have the jazz, the way we approach, you know, playing drums, jazz. Then you got the hip hop, the R&B style, and then, you know, you got electronica and fusion, you got M-bass, you know, you got jungle, like bass and drum and bass. But then you got like Indian music and African rhythms and, you know, Latin and, you know, it's so many different forms, and then even within those, there's like, you know, levels, or not even levels, but just diversity within that. You know, some guys, like even in Latin music, that messed me up, but because you know the clave. But some guys started the other way. Dum, 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 dum. You know, it's just, I was like, so which one is right? It's like, oh man, it just depends where you're from, man. Sometimes you start here, sometimes you start there, you just gotta hear it. I'm like, oh, okay. So, you know, to me, it's all just made up. We just all are having fun. And but the beauty of it is that it has become something that we rejoice in. And so we've made it something educational that we can teach. But, you know, music is just something that's just in you. And it's hilarious because I always laugh at the fact that I'm actually trying to teach it, because you can, a baby even knows when it's good or not good. You know, a baby be like, ooh. It's like he don't play a lick of music, but yet he knows, like, nah, daddy, that's not happening. I'm gonna need to go outside. But, you know, when it's good, like, you think of it like they have a lot of pops. No, me. You just get all the nasty, you know, you can tell when the cat's got the nasty face. Yeah. That's always the funniest thing you tell with people. Like, they don't like another musician, but, you know, if the cat is really happening, they can't help it though. They be like, man, that cat can't really play those. Trying to catch him singing. Oh man, I wouldn't dance, you know. His groove could be tighter. Oh man, nah, man, that should be me up there. I lost my place, but no more questions. I'm sorry. Okay, I guess. Sorry, we have to wrap this up. Okay, one really quick one, and then as I'm walking up. What? Yes. Thank you. See, that's it. That's connection. I was just about to do that, and then you beat me to it. I'm going to let these guys introduce themselves. They're fantastic players. Wonderful. I'm glad. Thank these guys for being up with me and being amazing.
My name is James Francis. I'm a freshman at the new school. It's an honor to play with Mr. Harlan, Crib, Houston.
Houston?
Yeah.
Right. And how old are you?
I'm 18 years old.
Base we have.
I'm Zach Ostroff, and I'm from New York. I go to Columbia, and I'm 21.
All right, thank you all. I want to see there's a lot of people here, so you should go on Twitter,
follow me, you know, follow these guys too. You know, say how amazing everything was. I just did a whole bunch of stuff. No, I'm just playing. But I'm serious at the same time. Eric Harmon won. That's my Twitter handle. You know, hashtag next generation. I don't know what the hashtag is. But thank you all for coming out, for being wonderful. Enjoy the rest of your time.
And there you have it, the Eric Harlan Masterclass. I hope you guys all enjoyed that. I know I did. I took a lot out of it. And it's just great to hear those professionals talk and give their knowledge from the experience that they've had in the past. So if you guys could leave a review in iTunes, I'd really appreciate it. I want to get to as many people as possible. And the more popularity we can achieve together, the more people we are going to help educate in this great music. So thank you so much. And we will definitely be coming out with episode 4 within the next couple days. All right. So again, as always, thank you and happy practicing.